Good morning. Welcome to the second day of the Nebraska Court of Appeals November panel. My name is Mike Pirtle. I'm from Omaha, and I am pleased to be joined today on my left, Judge Francie Reedman from Gretna, and on my right, Judge David Arterburn from Papillion. We have three cases this morning. We will take them in the order listed. The arguments are being audio recorded and will be available later on the Supreme Court website for your review if you are interested. I know we have some juvenile cases this morning, so in that those recordings will be available on the internet. I would ask that you use first names or be careful about the names that you are putting out there. I know in our first case, I think we have two appellants, an appellant and a cross-appellant. So have you decided how you're going to divide up the 10 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor. The appellees have agreed that they divide the time of the appellee 5 minutes.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, so, and I will call the case twice for purposes of the recording. The first case this morning is N. Ray Interest of Michael N. You may approach. This is N. Ray Interest of Michael N. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Alexis Mullaney, and I am here on behalf of the mother, Heather N. I'm here for Karen Nelson, who isn't able to be here today. May I please reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal? Your Honors, this case is about a hearing where neither the mother or the father received any meaningful notice before they were deprived of the liberty interest that they have of maintaining custody of their child and participating in that child's life. There's no argument in this case that no notice was requested, issued, or received by the parents before this hearing proceeded. Karen Nelson, attorney for the mother, objected and asked that the case be dismissed because no notice had been issued on either parent. The judge overruled that objection and did end up making a finding that the child should be removed from the home. I'd like to break this argument down into a couple of parts. It is well briefed, but first I'll talk about the notice issue, then kind of how it dovetails into due process problems, and then talk about how the court took judicial notice of a couple of items that would have been more properly introduced as evidence, and how that evidentiary deficiency then contributes to the overall problem with the evidence that was submitted or not submitted in support of the state's motion to get these children temporarily removed from the home. In the hearing before the juvenile court, Karen Nelson moved to dismiss this cause of action under Nebraska Rules of Pleading and Civil Action 611, B12, Section 2 and 5, as well as Nebraska Revised Statute 43-268, due to the state's failure to give timely notice. The juvenile code requires that notice shall be given in the manner provided for service of a summons in a civil action. After a reasonably diligent search, notice by publication can be made if the individual cannot be located. In this case, no notice, no press was even issued for a summons. No notice was given to the parents, and no one made any argument that such notice was given to the parents for this hearing.
Just the fact that the hearing was held only 5 days after the filing of the petition for the end of this at all?
I think the turnaround time makes it difficult to provide notice, but if the hearing is set that close to the filing of the petition and the state can't give notice to the parents, then maybe the hearing needs to be delayed further. Because if the parents can't be heard at that hearing, they really aren't being given an actual hearing to present their side of the story.
Don't we run into problems then sometimes with the ex parte, the removal, and then a hearing not being held soon enough? We usually get complaints then from the parents that the child was detained too long before there was
does cause a difficult challenge trying to balance these interests, but ultimately, after this, the outcome of this hearing was that the child was removed from the home without any opportunity for the parent to be heard, and no other hearing was going to happen until May. So then that's months and months from the time that the child was removed from the home and the time that the parents actually have a hearing where they've received notice of the hearing, or where the state has made a meaningful attempt to get notice to those parents. So in this case, and really in any case where the parents don't receive notice of this initial hearing, they're being deprived of their liberty interest in caring for their child for quite a long time, much longer than just the delay of that initial hearing if the state has to get notice from those parents.
Do you believe that the hearing, in essence, even though there's counsel appointed, is it basically an ex parte hearing at that stage when there's been no notice even attempted for the actual parents?
It essentially becomes an ex parte hearing, but it's not meant to be so. It's meant to be an evidentiary hearing that the parents are supposed to have notice of. So yes, it sort of inappropriately becomes almost the same status as that first emergency ex parte hearing, where the parents, of course, are not entitled to notice. Because this hearing will deprive those parents of the interest in their child for a substantial amount of time.
So what's the remedy in this situation?
The remedy that we have asked for is that the cause of action be dismissed for improper notice.
So despite the fact that, despite the fact that the child may be in danger, returning the child to the home is the better alternative?
I think the better alternative is for the state to give the parents notice in all cases where the parents' liberty interests are going to be deprived. And it's easy to say in one case or the other case that it seems unfair or unjustified, but the state has to meet some kind of threshold showing that they've given the parents an opportunity to show up and defend themselves against accusations that they're unfit to take care of this child.
In this case, as I recall, the allegation was the parents could not be located or found, so if you dismiss, where does the child go?
In this case, the judge did take judicial notice of the fact that the parents could not be found under the previous docket, but there had actually not been any attempt to locate the parents from the time of the filing of the petition to the time of this hearing. That was something that had been discussed in the previous docket. And there is some suggestion from the affidavit that was admitted that the state had a phone number for the parents and could have potentially gotten in contact with them.
What, if any, evidence do we have before us regarding those issues as far as where the parents are? What is there in our record for us to review as to the basis for what the juvenile court did?
There's not a lot in the record for you to review in this case, and that's nothing was actually admitted into evidence. The court took judicial notice of the previous docket, but it's difficult to determine what the judge was referring to when she took judicial notice of the fact that the parents could not be found. She doesn't refer to any particular order or findings, decree, anything like that. So I don't know where that...
And there was no offer of... Those documents were never made an exhibit that puts it in a position for us to review. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. The judge, rather than having them offered into evidence and accepted into evidence, that was, she took judicial notice of an affidavit and the previous docket, but did not have them offered as once they were received.
Was that sua sponte, or did the state request that judicial notice be taken?
I believe the state requested that judicial notice be taken of the affidavit, but I believe the judge sua sponte took judicial notice of the fact that the parents could not be located and took judicial notice of the previous docket. I see I am out of time. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Christina Murphy. I'm from the law firm of Marks, Clare & Richards. I represent the appellee cross-appellant Robert N., father of minor child Michael N., and to answer the last question that Your Honor asked, I believe that the evidence about the availability of a parent can be found in the exhibit that is on page 5 of your transcript, which is the affidavit that the judge took judicial notice of. In that affidavit, the Department of Health and Human Services admitted that they had had contact with my client, Mr. N., in August, September, and October of 2016, and they had a working phone number for him.
But that affidavit is in the transcript?
Yes, it is, sir.
Which does not allow us to review it. Because it's not evidence. Is that correct?
I believe you mean because it's not in the voter exception.
Correct.
Your Honor, I believe that I don't have the same position as the first appellant. I believe that a judge can take judicial notice of their own file, and page 5 of the Bill of Exceptions, page 5 of the transcript, was part of the actual court file, which is actually the case that's before you. It was used for the emergency ex parte order, and that was what was relied upon in this case to get the emergency ex parte order. So it was part of this actual file.
So that may allow the trial court to do it, but I think our law is pretty clear that we, on review, can only review evidence that's been offered and received contained in the bill of exceptions. So that being in the transcript, we disregard that.
I understand your position, Your Honor. If I may.
Do you have any authority to support your position that would say, notwithstanding the fact that it's not in the bill of exceptions, that we would have a right to review it and consider it?
I do not.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, if in fact the court finds that Judge Cirkovich did not have the right to take judicial notice of the previous file or this transcript, then it becomes clear that she has no evidence before her that the whereabouts of the parents were unknown. The rights of the parents to have custody of their natural child is perhaps the oldest of the fundamental liberty interests. A parent cannot be denied this liberty interest without the due process of law. In 2017, the Nebraska Supreme Court, in the case of N. Ray Carmelo, the Nebraska Supreme Court held that procedural due process rights apply to the protective custody during phase of a juvenile court case. The case before you today asks the question, does procedural due process require that a parent be given notice of a protective custody hearing? I submit that without notice, there is no meaningful right to a hearing and there is no procedural due process. In this case, the state filed an ex parte motion for immediate custody of Michael M. on February 2nd, and an ex parte order was entered that same day denying Robert M. the right to parent his own child.
Did you join in the motion to dismiss?
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
And so you're in agreement with Ms. Mullaney that the court erred in not dismissing the matter at that time?
Yes, Your Honor. Or at the minimum, she could have continued it and ordered. She could have continued it and ordered that notice be attempted on the parents. But she found that there is no requirement of notice of the protective custody hearing case, only the adjudication case. So she disregarded our argument. Between the ex parte order and the protective custody hearing held on February 7th, the state made no attempt to notify Mr. M of the emergency custody order, and they made no attempt to notify him of the protective custody hearing. At the hearing, the state indicated that they had not given Mr. M notice due to his, quote, whereabouts being unknown. They relied upon an affidavit that I understand, Your Honor, is not in evidence. But in that affidavit, it says that they had a working phone number for my client, a phone number they never bothered to even try to use. At a minimum, the state had a duty to inform Mr. M of the protective custody hearing. The hearing was held over the objection of both attorneys appointed to represent Michael's parents. And again, the trial court found that the state had no duty to give notice of the protective custody hearing. We are asking that the court specifically find that procedural due process demands the state give notice to a parent of the protective custody hearing. We are also asking that the state reverse the court's protective custody order and demand that we may be harming juveniles by making this requirement of notice at this hearing. But under due process, if there is no notice, there is no meaningful opportunity to be heard. And so in criminal cases, we are all the time on allowing one person, 100 people to go free for fear of one person being incarcerated. The right of a child to be parented by their own parent and the right of a parent to parent their own child is a fundamental liberty interest, just like being locked up. And we cannot err on locking up 100 children for fear that one might be harmed by the biological parent. We have to follow the rules of due process. Thank you.
Said that to the state. Good morning.
Good morning. Please be heard. Jennifer Clark, Deputy County Attorney of Douglas County here on behalf of the appellee in regards to this case. Your Honor, I feel this is a case of more practicality than I understand the need to ensure that service is met. And as the court has already noted, that you have a lot of conflict when it comes to the Supreme Court rule saying that the protective custody has to be heard within 10 days. Then you have the practicality of the state trying to locate and trying to serve those individuals in order to make sure that they knew their child was in place in foster care, put in protective custody, and they can be present at that hearing.
What evidence do we have in this case that the state went through any effort?
Your Honor, the state acknowledged to the court on the record that we did not have an address to be able to serve the parents. Therefore, any attempt made would have been futile. The only information that we had was from the previous case, which is they were out of state, which in practicality, there's no way to be able to get service on an individual out of state within a five-day period.
What's the procedure then? Let's assume all those things are true. Then what do you do?
The only remedy that I would ask the court to at this time is court feels that Judge Sirkovich overstepped her bounds and ruled improperly, I would ask the court to reverse and remand back to the court to have it set for another protective custody hearing.
Isn't that in essence, though, giving the state what they wanted to begin with? I mean, the child still remains out of home for an extended period of time. I mean, I guess I'm stuck on what do we do if we send it back.
Your Honor, this would have been happen if we had, the state would have, if it was set a little bit longer, we probably would try to publish. That would be the only remedy that the state would have had at that point to actually notify the parents. If there is no known address, if I have no idea where a parent is at, if a parent is homeless, if a parent is not making themselves available, I can't go out and try to locate these individuals throughout the country and try to get them served within that amount of time. The fact that their child isn't out of foster care and in protective custody, part of that should trigger the fact that the parent doesn't have their child, and they are aware that their child is in foster care. That is why I believe Judge Sirkovich took judicial notice of the previous docket with that history, as well as the affidavit of the Nebraska Family Collaborative Caseworker, as noted by Ms. Murphy, that had a phone number. But again, I can't serve a phone number. I actually have to have a location to be able to serve an individual.
So what do you do in the interim? Again, just assuming all the things you're saying, that these people can't be found, and so you have to do what any litigant has to do. You have to try to find them. You have to try to serve them. If you can't serve them, you file your affidavit and you have to publish. What happens in the interim there? Because all you have is an ex parte order, correct?
That is correct.
So what is the procedure that should be followed for ex parte orders?
Your Honor, I think the process that we have right now is fine. I don't think that...
Isn't there case law that says you should have a hearing within 10 to 14 days if all you have is ex parte orders?
And absolutely, I agree.
And the judge here set a hearing months away, not 10 days away.
Which is correct. But again, you have to realize the practicality. I can't serve someone in that amount of time if I don't know where they're at. So if I to be able to try to get it in, I mean, Douglas County tries to get all these hearings within 10 to 14 days. The unfortunate part is most of the time when they come in within 5 days, there's no way to be able to even try to locate some of these parents. So, yes, it is difficult to adhere to the fact that you need to get these hearings in within that certain amount of time frame. But there's also the practicality of how do we get these individuals served if either A, they don't want to be served, B, they're homeless and we have no one knows where they're at, or C, they're out of state, and the only way to do that is to send summons to another sheriff's office and try to get them served, which in my experience...
I'm not really asking you that question. I'm asking you, what do you do in court while you're trying to get all that done? What do you do in court? When is the next hearing? After you don't have notice or service, when is the next hearing? When should the next hearing be?
As soon as possible as the state can obtain service.
What does the law say? Not what's the practicality. What does the law say, Ms. Clark?
I don't know if the law has anything definitive that after you have a protective custody where you can't obtain service.
Isn't that an ex parte hearing if there's no service?
Yes.
Isn't there a law that says how soon you have to have the next hearing if it's an ex parte hearing?
Yes, you do.
What is that law?
That you have to have an ex parte hearing within 8 to 10 judicial days after the ex parte communication.
Okay.
And you need to get notice to those individuals. However, again, you have to put a practical side to this. If I don't know where they're at, and as the attorneys here have argued to this court, that you need to be able to give service and notice to those individuals, but I don't know where they're at, how am I supposed to be able to get that? And how is the court able to have a hearing? Most of the other judicial courts in Douglas County, what they do is they continue the hearing out to do a protective custody and adjudication. They also inform the parent that if the client wishes to either resist or actually present themselves in court, in regards to the whole issue of protective custody and having that liberty of having their child with them, they can present themselves to the court and request that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. The case is submitted, and we appreciate you being here this morning. Oh, I'm sorry.
We got rebuttal.
I've done that before, so there's precedent for that. I'm sorry.
I was about ready to get up and leave.
How much time does she have left?
1 minute.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just wanted to touch quickly on an issue that came up after I was up here last, the issue of the court taking judicial notice of the prior docket and the affidavit. At this point, in addition to the issues that we have with notice to the parents, the issue of judicial notice is also very serious because there's nothing that's been submitted into evidence to even show that the child was in danger, needed to be removed from the home, not appropriately, or could not be appropriately placed with the parents. There's no evidence that's been submitted on the record, so there's no evidence upon which the judge could be making her decision to remove the child from the home. And I would just like to, at this time, ask that this court remand this case to the juvenile court so that it can be dismissed for improper notice and for the fact that there was no evidence actually submitted or reviewed to take the child into out-of-home placement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Case is submitted.